All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast. All right, so Framber Valdez, was it intentional? Was it not intentional? Him getting crossed up? Did he get crossed up with Cesar Salazar, or was it Framber just being a child, as Clint Sterner called him yesterday several times? Framber is a child, Chief. It was good radio, man. It was fun. It was I enjoyed listening to the other shows talk about it. I enjoyed seeing actual former baseball players talk about it on MLB Network and other places yesterday. And the guy
what was
said,
the general consensus from former players?
The big one that I saw, the general consensus is Framber's a jerk.
Yeah.
If for no other reason, because if they did get crossed up and he pegged him in the chest, he just turned around and walked back to the mound without going,
that
hey, bro,
part of
you
it.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, at a minimum, he was unprofessional.
That was the whole thing. There was a pettiness involved.
Pettiness,
there, where
yes.
It was just like, yeah, the look looked like that's what you get.
Yeah,
that was the look of that's what you get. Was it not?
Yes, yeah, it was. And the look on Salazar's face was what the hell,
bro.
Man? Yeah, bro.
Yeah,
it was a bro. Yeah. AJ Pruszynski, former catcher, very outspoken, said that he would have thrown the ball as hard as he could at Framber's knees. Like when he threw the ball back out for him to throw the next pitch, he would have thrown it at his knees. The general consensus was that the story of them being crossed up, air quotes, is BS because of the way the two players reacted to it and because there was a need for a meeting with the manager behind closed doors after the game.
Yeah,
that was that seemed to be what people around
right.
Baseball
yeah, like there's
about.
No like this is that's not typically what happens when things get crossed up.
Yeah,
when guys are getting crossed up, it's something you manage in the moment. You figure out what happened, all of that.
Yep.
And plus, you know, Salazar saying maybe I hit the wrong button or that there was a lot of noise in the stadium, which doesn't really track. So something. In my mind, the most generous way I can think of it, and maybe the most likely, is that Framber was caught up in the heat of the moment. He was pissed off, and that he was going to throw a sinker because he wanted to throw a sinker. It's not that his intent was necessarily to bean the catcher or anything. It was just more. It was more manslaughter than murder.
Yeah,
you know, like it just he was angry and driving fast, and he hit a pedestrian. The intent, it wasn't premeditated murder.
Yeah. So here was, Ben, we'll get to the drive stuff here. We'll find some. They had Robert Flores on the afternoon show yesterday. He had some interesting thoughts on it as well that we'll get to. But this was, during the toss yesterday, this was good radio. Ron came in, and Ron's got the contrarian opinion in this. And I'm not saying he's being a contrarian. He probably genuinely feels this way. But he is certainly on an island right now with saying, like, no, he didn't think there was intent with Framber. And I'll let Ron explain it, but it sounds like the main premise is, hey, nobody even on the Astros went out to say something to Framber after this whole sequence went down. Lopez felt strongly the opposite. Here's what it sounded like yesterday when In the Loop was doing the toss with the drive.
I think there are multiple conversations. The one that I'm discussing of, did that man pull up there after the changeup that he threw and say,
I don't think he did do that.
Nobody addressed him.
Oh, well, they addressed it in the locker room afterwards, reportedly, in the clubhouse. Here's the thing. While I agree that he didn't say, I'm going to hit him, even just throwing it, crossing him up intentionally, there's that possibility, number one. And number two, that's idiotic.
But you're saying the same thing, though. If he's crossed him up intentionally.
I think he did.
And threw a fastball with him thinking he was going to throw something else, then you're saying he did it on purpose.
He absolutely did it on purpose.
And I don't.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
He 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, you can't say.
Not 95, not 99. 100%.
100%. You weren't in there. 100%.
And
again, if everybody out here sees him as 100%, Framber Valdez should have his ass suspended.
And the
rest of them dudes apparently ain't dogs. And I don't believe that with Carlos Correa. I believe they will address it. We'd have heard furniture moving if he'd have taken advantage of that cat and threw it at him on purpose.
Well, no.
There is a report out there that furniture did move at some point in the clubhouse afterwards, depending on whether you want to believe that.
I heard that there were some people who talked to him about it. There wasn't no furniture. We would have heard more. I'm sorry. You can go 100%. That is a hell of a leap.
It's not that.
The big leap is your side. What am I leaping? You're leaping from somebody who.
Yeah, okay.
All right, yeah, man.
It's your show. I won't take it over. But just, I'll just leave you. I'll just leave it with this. if he didn't throw it on purpose, if it was an accident, how come he didn't go, my bad, sorry about that? He turned around and walked away, pissed off.
Yeah, I think that is the worst look of it. I think he was, why did the catcher start walking out there going, hey man, what the hell's going on? I think he was extremely frustrated about the whole situation.
I'm going to overtalk you like you do. If it was an accident, how come the catcher walked out there and
John, you just said the same damn thing you just said. Do you want me to respond to it or you want to just keep talking?
No, and then he looked at the dugout like, what the hell's going on?
And they all just sat on their asses, and nobody did nothing. Everybody just said, go ahead and throw the next pitch.
They did until the end of the game.
Right? Nobody did nothing.
Have a good show.
Nobody did nothing. They just sat there. They just said, all right, man. Ain't nobody going to go ahead and talk to him?
Easily my favorite part is John Lopez saying, I'm going to overtalk you at the end.
Okay, this is the one. I think Ron makes a good point of, okay, if it was that bad, why didn't anybody stop? Go out there. I think that because there's a few things going on there. For one, because that's going to be a mound visit. And two, I don't think that even if in the – because Correa wears the pitch com, you know, it's, so if Correa thought it was a genuine cross-up, that he's not analyzing body language and everything in that moment. And in the very – in the course of 10 or 15 seconds, it's such a weird situation that I don't think that's something that you just automatically, oh yeah, this is the automatic response that we do in these situations.
Agreed.
I'm gonna charge the team a mound visit and go off and figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
It was a very, whenever anything that's extremely out of the ordinary happens, you throw out standard responses, or this is what this guy would do, or this is what that guy would do. Because it's just, there's no automatic rule book or playbook for how you handle situations like that.
Yeah.
So I think Ron brings up a good point, but I don't think that the automatic thing there is for Correa to go, you know, get a timeout and a mound visit. And maybe he was waiting to see if the pitching coaches were going to do something.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody knew what the hell was going on.
No, I mean, it's a fair point. And look, I think if you're trying to, I don't want to say defend Fromber, but if you're defending that side of the argument, You don't have much else other than that to use as weaponry in your argument against Lopez or anybody else, especially in light of the report. I'll read Michael Schwab's tweet right here, and I think this is what Reggie was referring to when he said that there was, air quotes, furniture getting thrown around after the game. I think that was metaphorical. Sources, this is Schwab, sources tell me tensions rose in the Astros clubhouse last night after the loss when players confronted Framber Valdez for his in-game actions involving Cesar Salazar. The argument escalated, and coaches eventually stepped in to calm the situation. While intent behind the pitch remains unclear, Valdez's initial refusal to address Salazar frustrated many in the clubhouse.
Yeah, and that's why I think I don't know if Ron would call this a leap or not, but I think that Ron started off saying that there are multiple different angles to this, but then tried to lump the intent and the action into the same thing. That if you're throwing, because I think the manslaughter versus murder analogy is, all right, I think it's very possible that Framber was really angry and being stubborn, had already, you know, ignored Salazar in the previous at-bat.
Two pitches before
when,
that.
When Salazar is trying to call a timeout or get him to step off the mound, he ignores him, throws a sinker, right, for the grand slam?
Yes.
And then two pitches later, wants to throw a sinker, isn't getting that call for whatever reason, so he throws a sinker belligerently, but that doesn't mean that his intent was, I'm gonna hit him in the chest with it.
I'm gonna hurt him.
He's just in that moment thinking like, no, I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
So like, one crime is greater than the other.
Yeah.
But they're both a pitcher in Framber who's been emotionally erratic at times in his career, just kind of losing control of his emotions on the mound.
Yeah. I think, you know, with respect to Ron's argument, that why didn't anybody do anything? You know, especially a guy like Correa, who is a reputed mound visitor, especially when Fromber's on the mound. You know, that we have that vision of him back in the COVID year coming out and pumping up Fromber. And I just my brain starts to go to, okay, what would that look like? And it's, to me, it was something, first of all, it's hard for anybody playing shortstop and third base to see all the things that we see on the camera. We're predicating so much of it, and look at the look on Fromber's face, look at the look on Salazar's face.
Yeah.
Correa and Pena has a pitch com also in his hat, I guess. They're not seeing any of this. You know, they're just seeing that there was a mix-up at home plate. So do you go to the mound to address every mix-up at home plate? Like, again, you made a great point, burning a mound visit in a game against the Yankees here, where I know it's 6-0, but there's still a lot of time left in that game to get back into the game. I just, to me, it felt like one of those things that if you're a teammate of either of those guys and you're out there on the infield while this is all going on, this is some, okay, we got to address this in the dugout or the clubhouse. This isn't something we're going to make a big scene about and stop the game so that Carlos can come out and show up for, and if Fromber, if it was an accident, then Carlos is out there for no reason showing up Fromber and saying, what the hell, man? You know, like it's, because there was a chance that they thought it was a mix-up. Look, to this day, that is still the story the Astros are delivering us, is it was a mix-up. That's why here's real quick, Seth, here's Robert Flores on this yesterday. Very first question right out of the chute.
Well, look, we have to take Fromber Valdez and Cesar Salazar at their word.
Okay, pause it right there, Ben. We'll play the rest of it in a little bit. No, we don't. No, we don't.
Well, no, if we do take them at their words, there's conflicting words. Fromber said, I called for a sinker.
Yeah.
He can't call for a sinker because he doesn't have the device that allows him to make calls.
Yeah.
So, no, he cannot call for a sinker. And then he said it didn't matter, what I wanted to do was throw the sinker. Like, okay, if I'm going to take him at his words are already conflicting.
Yeah.
Salazar says, maybe I hit the wrong. A couple of different times he said, I hit the wrong button. And at least one of the times he said, maybe I hit the wrong button. But he also said that it was hard to hear because of the buzz in the stadium.
Yeah.
Like, all right, the second pitch after a grand slam when you're at home, I don't think that's not noise that's above and beyond what guys work through in the playoffs and what have you.
Yeah, there is so much circumstantial evidence that this is a different version of Fromber over the last 2 months between all the brain farts in the field that convey either a lack of focus or some sort of petulance, all of those things, all of the quotes after these games about the outfield wasn't lined up the right way. Oh, yeah, I should have backed up home plate, but I can't control this, 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 and this. Oh, it was tough for me to pitch today because, they sure went out there and got three outs offensively real quick. I didn't even have time to get a drink of water. If Fromber saying, there is enough circumstantial evidence with the version of Fromber we've seen over the last 6 weeks that, no, we don't have to take him at his word. What are you talking about? We got to take him at his word.
Well, plus, okay, Salazar tries to get him to step off the mound. Fromber doesn't.
Two pitches ago, and he
throws a sinker that allows a home run. Next two pitches, including the one we're talking about, both sinkers.
Yeah.
Next one after that, a sinker. Yeah. Like everything about it just sounds like Fromber belligerent. Now he throws more sinkers than anything else. So it's like in and of itself, that's not, you know, all that uncommon for him to throw a bunch of sinkers in a row.
Right.
But Fromber, you can't tell me Fromber's just in a mode where he wasn't saying, screw you, I'm throwing the sinker no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's, and it's Fromber. Again,
it's Fromber.
We wouldn't be saying this about, if you told me beforehand that a pitcher was going to have an issue like this, which pitcher is it? I would 100% say Fromber. Anybody who watches the Astros would say, oh, that's going to be Fromber. That'll 100% be Fromber.
He's minus 2,000 on the odds board of Astros pitchers that this would be. It's not even Fromber versus the field. It's Fromber.
Yeah, and as far as, because I do think it's a valid distinction in saying, like, okay, I didn't mean to hit him in the chest because I wasn't thinking it through. Think about any time you've ended a relationship in the heat of the moment by saying something when you're angry.
Yeah.
You don't mean to end the relationship, but you say something you can't come back from.
Right.
And it's just, that's what happens with people. You're in the heat of the moment, you're emotional, you're lashing out. And that, I could totally see Fromber being that in that moment. He's not consciously thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to hit him and teach him a lesson. But he was, he could very well consciously or just going on anger and rage and
yeah,
whatever else.
Yeah, dude, there's just so much. There is such a bigger burden of proof on the side that's saying, no, he didn't mean to do this, than there is on the side that, like, no, he meant to do this. Like, and again, to your point, like, do I think his wish, do I think Fromber threw that pitch, and as he was walking back to the mound with his surly face going, ha, I really meant to hit him in the chest and have him keel over and something happened with his heart. No, he was angry, and that was the end result of the pitch was it pegged the guy in the chest protector.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Look, as a man who's committed many, many crimes of passion in my life, I can tell you I never intended for the harm to be as great as it was.
Correct.
I just sometimes don't know my own strength.
That's right.
You know?
Yep, I do.
The other thing, too, is he seemed to belligerently want to keep throwing the sinker. If he had thrown a four seam high in the zone or something, that would be a murder weapon right there. Because he doesn't throw a lot of four seamers.
Oh yeah,
but that would have been the real tell there if he had just flat out gone after him. The fact that he threw a sinker, I'm willing to say, like, okay, he just belligerently wanted it to be just the pitch he wanted to throw.
I think the right solution would have been to throw a rising fastball that pegged the umpire in the face, and then everybody would have been happy. Yankees,
Astros. Oh, Aaron Boone might,
Astros,
yeah. Aaron Boone would have been happy.
Aaron Boone, I think the umpire needed to be the sacrificial lamb in this whole thing. That's the problem. Here was Robert Flores on the drive yesterday when he was asked, I think Ron asked him this at the end of the interview, what are you hearing from former major leaguers about this? Where do they stand on this?
I don't want to betray their confidence, so I'll just say that it raised eyebrows. I'll just leave it at that. I don't know what else to say. So is the Texans offensive line going to be any better this year, or
they think so?
Okay.
Hey, we'll see Sunday, baby.
We'll see Sunday.
The talk is big now.
They're all fixable.
There you go. Hey, at least we're not Cowboys fans, right?
There you go.
Come on. All right,
there
you go. Way to deflect. That was master.
If he had asked D'Amico Ryans that question, D'Amico would say, as he said yesterday, I don't know.
Yeah.
he said flat out, is the offensive line going to be better? I don't know.
Yep.
D'Amico is tired of all the talk. He's tired of just an entire offseason where obviously the team itself has been fixated on this. It's not like a media versus the team type of thing.
Nope.
When you swap out four starting offensive linemen, get a new offensive line coach and a new offensive coordinator after allowing the third most sacks in the league. Yeah. Yeah, you tend to just want to see it in action on Sunday.
For sure. All right, so there we go. We've adjudicated once again Frombergate.
You have to look at it in the sum total of the way Fromber's been this year, where, you know, as you've pointed out multiple times, he's criticized the team and or his teammates. He hasn't covered first. Like, it's been a regression for Fromber when it comes to keeping an even keel and all those things. He's regressed to a lot of old bad habits this year.
Last thing on Fromber, and then we'll get to our head coach death pool. Something more cheery, like the head coach death pool. Mm-hmm. Do you think he's going to make a lot of money? Obviously, someone's going to pay Fromber a lot of money this offseason. I don't think it's going to be the Astros, but somebody will. But if he is damaged at all in terms of the amount of money he's going to get, what does more damage for Fromber, this stretch that he's had here over the last 6 or 7 starts, if it continues, where he's just through the rest of this season, he's at best an average pitcher and you can't trust him every 5 days, or what's happened in the last 48 hours? What's more damaging to Fromber on the market? Performance
as
a pitcher?
48 hours is damaging.
Performance as a teammate. Yeah.
I think that's the kind of thing where ownership starts asking questions.
Yep.
If a team is thinking about signing Fromber, that a lot of owners that might otherwise be kind of just, hey, I hire baseball people to do the baseball thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the owner might come in and be like, hey, what, take me through your thinking on this, guys.
Yeah.
And then immediately the GM is like, oh, okay, sure. I'm going to be under a lot of scrutiny on this one.
Yeah. Some of the owners might, some of the owners, especially if they don't face the Astros very much, might be like, oh, is that the guy that I saw them talking about for 2 days on TV?
Yeah.
Because he hit a teammate in the chest with a ball?
And then the other thing is that this would be the ideal scenario. If Fromber has a talk with a sports psychologist, Nunez, who's in town right now, or at least he was on the night of the incident in question, that Fromber admits, you know what, maybe he strayed from whatever protocol he was on before to keep that even keel, which he's done a great job of these last few years, that maybe he has a come-to-Jesus moment, figures it out, and then goes on to be awesome through the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I think then maybe his damage is already, you know, maybe his value is already damaged with other teams.
Yeah.
But maybe the Astros feel better about, okay, a reasonable offer to keep him here for a few years.
Yeah.
And that you end up getting good Framber for the majority of the duration of that 3 years.
Yeah.
But so you get a bit of a discount because of his
actions. It's an interesting thought. There's part of me, Seth, that feels like his behavior over the last month and a half, 2 months, has something to do with him just not wanting to be here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like he just doesn't want to be an Astro. So I don't know. I don't think he's getting I didn't think he was getting a 7 or 8 year deal before just because he's 32 years old. So we'll see what happens. Someone's going to pay him a ton of money.
He's already made a boatload of money in his career. So he's made $59.8 million.
Has he really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, he's making 18 this year. Okay, he's made 50.
So it's not one of those situations where you think, okay, boy, what's he going to be when he's got a lot of money?
Yeah,
he's already made a lot of money. But that even though he's made a lot of money, that one huge contract, might be enough for him to really just be like, I'm just going to do what I want to do these days.
He's about to make $150 million in one stroke of a pen.
That's right, when Derek Stingley signed his big contract and people are asking him all the questions about, what's it like? What are you going to do for your family and everything? He's already made $35 million.
Third overall pick, yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
He had $35 million just for signing his name.
It's
not
like all of a sudden he's going to be able to swap out the Shaq sneakers for Jordans or something. Well,
finally get rid of this roommate that I've had all these years.
Yeah.
I don't have to split the light bill with him anymore. All right, keep texting in. There's some good texts. It says Roflo hosts a show on MLB Network where those guys express their thoughts. Not answering the question on the radio is chicken bleep. Ooh, wow. How about that? A little chicken bleep on Roflo.
Yeah, I wonder if Roflo started thinking. I think his first instinct might have been to say this one guy told me such and such, but he pulled back from that.
But
the guys have said things publicly on MLB Network.
Oh, 100%. That's what Pruszynski said his thing. Yeah, no, they totally have. I just don't like the notion that because Fromber said he didn't do it, we've got to take him at his word. I think that's chicken bleep to me.
The fact that they had to have a meeting with Espada afterwards for something that, if it's just that they got crossed up, that's typically no big deal.
Yeah.
That's an administrative error that you take care of and you figure it out. The fact that they had to have a meeting with Espada, I feel like is almost all you need to know.
Yes, I agree with you. I want to be Roflo's kid. If you get in trouble, you just tell them, hey, man, I didn't do it. Well, I got to take you at your word.
Yeah, I'll take you at your word.
Okay, last text, and then we'll get to the death pool, I promise. The Lopez versus Hughley argument is fascinating. You have two huge egos that aren't always intellectually honest sparring with one another.
Ooh, whoa, that's some smoke.
That combo might be a great recipe for some outstanding radio content. I'm not going to comment on the whole, intellectually honest, whatever. That's your opinion. It was good radio. That's all I'm going to say yesterday. It was good radio, man. That's why we replayed it. All right.
I saw Mina Kimes and, I can't remember who the other one was. Both another notable sports media personality. And they were talking about when you go on First Take or when you go on Skip Bayless's show, whatever he's doing now, that there is an element of be careful and beating them too conclusively in an argument.
Oh yeah,
you just won't be invited back.
Won't be on the show anymore. Yeah, no, you got to lay down. This is Mr. Burns at the company picnic. You let Mr. Burns win the potato sack race and the three-legged race and everything else.
Yeah, I don't think I could sign on for that, man.
I definitely couldn't sign on for that.
No.
Too competitive.
yeah.
I don't want to lose an argument. All right, head coach death pool time. Seth and I do this every year. The odds come out, and then that is the impetus for us to do our head coach death pool. So the odds on the first head coach fired came out last week. I'm not going to go through the odds right now because I know you can look at them here, Seth. I want us to pick these without the audience having heard who the favorites are for this yet. I don't want to I want to poison the water. I will say this. D'Amico Ryans is way too high up this list. The fact that he's in the middle of the pack on this thing at 50-1 is silly to me right now. I will take
You know what? I saw first quarterback benched too. Yeah. And CJ Stroud was way too high on that
33-1
Yeah. There was one huge chunk. There were a lot of guys that were 33-1 but then there were guys at 50-1 that I was offended that guys like Jordan Love and other guys like that were that much higher than CJ Stroud. Or they were a notch below CJ Stroud.
Yeah. Man, we need CJ to get his rookie of the year season groove back this year so he's not showing up there on those lists. All right, so I will note this before we get into this. The last five winners of this, of the last five first head coaches to be fired, Seth won the competition between the two of us. We each pick four, and we're trying to get the one that gets fired first. The last five, four of them have been fairly far down the odds board heading into the season. Bill O'Brien was not a favorite in 2020. Urban Meyer was not one of the favorites in 2021. Matt Rhule was the favorite in 2022. Frank Reich, his replacement, not near the top in 2023. And then Robert Saleh was the winner last year in 2024. He was like 25-1 to start the season. All five of those guys, Seth, all had kind of messed up situations, either self-inflicted or otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, Bill O'Brien was the GM and Jack Easterby was hanging around. Urban Meyer had all sorts of issues going on that were unanticipated. Dave Tepper is the owner of the team that was the next two guys. And then the Aaron Rodgers situation and Woody Johnson's punk kids in the locker room and all that stuff last year with Robert Saleh. I'm having a hard time finding a situation like that on the list this year, but I'm going to let you go first.
And well, let's do this. Ben, think of a number from 1 to 10.
Okay. 3.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, we have to say the number first, Ben.
Think of a number.
Think of a number, yeah.
Think of a number.
It's a good answer, Ben.
From 1 to 10.
It was a good answer. Three is definitely between 1 and 10. That was a very good answer.
Okay.
I win.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to ready? Yeah. Got it, Ben?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go first. 3.
Damn it. That was my choice. I'll go with 7.
It was 7.
Oh, yes.
All you right. Should have gone with 4, by the way, right, Sean. Right. That would have been the smart thing for you
to do. I should have.
Since I already locked out 3.
You.
So, okay, you go first.
I'm a sportsman. I'm going to go first. I'm going to go first, and I am going to take the favorite at the top of the board. I am going to take Mike McDaniel of the Miami Dolphins. Mike McDaniel of the Miami Dolphins. Now, again, this isn't will he get fired. This is first head coach fired.
I'll tell you what, this is a really hard year for a couple reasons. One is that teams have started to shy away from firing coaches in season. And two, a lot of the guys who are most deserving of getting fired are in organizations that are historically very loath to fire a coach in season or at all.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's tough. Like the, or like Brian Daboll, man, by all intents, like you would think that Brian Daboll or Joe Shane, the GM, would have been fired multiple times in the last couple of years.
Yep.
But they just, I think they're going to make it through the season.
Okay. So
I think the biggest capacity for a dumpster fire that finally ends up landing, because there also might be some GM versus head coach objectives at play here.
Yeah.
Like the butting heads.
Yep.
Kevin Stefanski.
That's a great one. That was going to be my next pick. My next pick.
I mean, Kevin Stefanski's been stuck with this high profile situation where he has more quarterbacks than he knows how to even get reps.
Yep.
And I'm guessing that's not what he wanted or liked. So I think there's a potential for friction there.
I think there's potential for Jimmy Haslam just going, look, these last 4 years have just been a complete bleep show. I'm just going to push the red button and fire everybody.
Yeah.
And we're going to draft a quarterback with. We got an extra first round pick from the Travis Hunter trade, and we're going to go get one of these quarterbacks, and I'm going to do it with a completely new set of people. I think it's a great pick. My next pick, I'm going to take Brian Callahan of the Tennessee Titans. He's 18-1 on this list, but the rumor was in the offseason that they were thinking of firing him after 1 year.
Yeah.
And if Cam Ward gets off to a bad start, look, Brian Callahan was brought in last year, Seth, to hopefully repair Will Levis, and we saw how that worked out. If all of a sudden this next quarterback and Cam Ward is veering in the wrong direction, I could see the Titans go, look, Cam, we're gonna fire this guy. We're gonna find the right guy this offseason. Just get through this rookie year, and we're going to find the right guy for you. So, and given the fact there were rumors of them firing him last year, I'm going Callahan with my second pick.
Okay. This one was not one of my first choices, but the more I try to play it out in my brain, the Panthers have an owner who's very temperamental, very impetuous, petty, takes hats off of restaurant workers' heads and insults them.
Has had the winner in this exercise two of the last 3 years.
Yeah, and you start to think, I kind of think that Tepper is kind of I think he's going to be like Dan Snyder. You think he's made some progress and growth and maturity, and then all of a sudden he reverts back to his old form. Any kind of step back at all from the progress that Bryce Young made last year, while also having a defense that is very, very suspect still, I think that Dave Canales is he's standing on unstable ground right now. Dave
I
Canales.
Like that. I think that's a I think that is a really, really good pick. All right, my next pick here. Boy, you're right. This is a tougher field this year than we've seen in years past. I think there's expectations in Arizona this year.
And there are, yeah.
There's expectations. They were a competitive 4-win team. Jonathan Gannon's first year. They were an 8-win team last year.
Kyler Murray got better as the season went along.
He did. And I'm about to make this pick knowing that Kyler Murray is the quarterback on 3 of my fantasy teams that I'm on this year, because I think he is going to have a good year. But that's a hard division. You got the Rams. I think the Niners are going to be back again this year. The Seahawks are kind of sneaky. That's a tough division. I'm going to go Jonathan Gannon. I'm going to go Jonathan Gannon with one of my picks.
How many more picks do I have?
You have 2 more. I have 1 more.
All right. So my eyes keep going to Kyle Shanahan, and that might surprise people because he's been a fixture there for so long. But part of it has been that, man, they've been competitive. They've gone to Super Bowls, but they've also spent heavily. And they're at a point this year where, all right, most people expect them to rebound, and they've got an advantageous schedule. There's a lot of things that make it look like the 49ers should be right back up there at the top of the NFC. But I just even if they get off to a slow start, I don't think he's been there too long. I don't think they just tip it all over in one fell swoop until the end of the year.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with Brian Daboll.
Brian Daboll.
And this is why. Joe Shane's the ultimate survivor.
Dude, yeah.
He publicly bamboozled the owner on HBO Hard Knocks, and the doofus owner didn't even realize that the GM was doing it to him. Like, actively misled the owner about what Saquon Barkley was and how much they were trying to retain him. And they did it in plain sight, but the doofus owner didn't even realize it. Cucked him completely. Yeah. Beta male owner, and that Joe Shane's going to be able to point the finger at Brian Daboll when they get off to a yet another horrendous start.
I don't know why you think the owner's such a doofus.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's so dumb.
Where did I leave my shoes?
I like what you're telling me about Daboll.
My wife gave me the shoes with laces this morning, and instead of the Velcro.
No Velcro.
Can you tie them for me, Joe Shane?
Yeah. All right, my last one. I'm going to go Shane Steichen, Seth.
Okay.
Someone's going to take the fall for this bad quarterback situation in Indianapolis, and Jim Irsay's not around anymore to let the head coach and the GM that he loves. Remember he did that thing with Chuck Pagano and Ryan Grigson back in the day where both guys felt like they should have been fired, and he had a kumbaya with them. It feels like Ballard's kind of outlived his welcome there. And, you know, Steichen in year 3, again, a little like Callahan with Levis, Steichen was brought in to be the guy to groom Anthony Richardson, and Richardson stinks so much so that he's not even the starter anymore. And now with Jim Irsay no longer with us, we don't know anything about the daughters that are running this thing. They might be a whole lot more impulsive than the old man. So I'm going with Steichen as my last. So I've got McDaniel, Callahan, Gannon, Steichen. Who's your last pick?
Oh boy,
field this year, man.
It's really, really tough. There's so many teams. There's so many teams that just don't fire their coaches.
Yep.
Long term, as much as in his season, I want to keep saying Zach Taylor because just because of their situation defensively last year, the underperforming, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I just I cannot see them firing him. The only way they fire him is if one of the coordinators agrees to be the head coach for the next 2 years without getting a pay increase. So I don't know enough about those guys to see to think yeah. about whether they would do that or not. The let's see, you already did Callahan.
I did Callahan, yep.
I don't think it's going to be Raheem Morris. But, boy, you know, the Atlanta front office, when it came to hiring, when it came to when they were interviewing Belichick, there were a lot of reports that, man, there's a lot of infighting for the ear of the owner in that organization. Yeah. There are a lot of people that felt that Belichick was a threat somehow or something. So I could see somebody getting a hold of Arthur Blank and, you know, seizing control for a moment, and part of that would be firing Todd Bowles.
Yes.
So I'll put Todd Bowles up
Well,
there.
Todd, but you mean Raheem Morris.
Exactly. Excuse me, Raheem Morris.
I think Raheem Morris is a good pick, and I think it's because you've got, again, you've got a young quarterback, although Penix is not as young as some of the other guys in his draft class, but a first-time named starter young quarterback that if he gets off to a bad start, the defensive head coach will take the fall for something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I think that's a good pick. All right, so I have McDaniel. Again, this is our head coach death pool. We have to have the one that gets fired first in our group of four. I have McDaniel, Callahan, Gannon, Steichen. Seth has Stefanski. I wrote Tepper. I meant Canales. Stefanski, Canales, Daboll, and Raheem Morris. May the best guillotine win. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you as we roll on here in the 7 o'clock hour on a Thursday. All right, back injuries are a big topic in this Texans game coming up on Sunday, specifically Matthew Stafford. What exactly does an epidural do for you when it comes to dealing with a disc issue? We had a Texans legend dish on that topic yesterday on the Pat McAfee show. We'll hear from that specific Texans legend coming up next. Payne and Pendergast, a lot of people weighing in on first head coach fired. Someone texted Kalen DeBoer. College doesn't count. It's NFL. It's not college, all right?
That is, boy, Kalen DeBoer is a classic cautionary tale of taking over for a legend, you know, whether it be Nebraska or it's dicey, man. It's dicey.
Be the guy that takes over for the guy that took over for the legend. That's the key. Yeah, that is the key for sure.
My friend Jay Fiedler took over for Dan Marino in Miami. I wouldn't have told him not to take the job. That was the only time he was a named starter in the NFL, but that's a tough one. His locker was right next to Dan Marino's locker, which had plexiglass in front of it.
They retired the locker next to him? Oh, my God. That's great. So back issues have been a big topic around here. Not because the Texans have anybody with a back issue that we know of, but Matthew Stafford reportedly has been taking epidurals for a disc issue in his back throughout the offseason. Yeah.
He practiced very little until last week.
Yep.
So far, so good. Steady as she goes. But we have very little information really about just what, or really little information as to, you know, what to expect out of Matt Stafford.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Just don't know.
J.J. Watt was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. And they got talking about this.
Talking about this because of Micah Parsons.
Oh, yeah. Because Micah Parsons has the back issue.
Yeah.
That's right. So
it's relevant to us because of Matt Stafford.
Correct.
But JJ was talking about it because of Micah Parsons'
that's
back
right.
issue.
Yep, that's right. And so Parsons is taking epidurals as well because of his back issue. JJ Watt told the anecdote about how he took an epidural in season 1 year. Because he collapsed in the weight room. He literally was squatting during the week.
He was warming up.
He said, I did 5 sets of 405 on the squat rack.
No, he was on his way up, and he had 275 on his back, which isn't a lot of weight at all for a guy like JJ.
He's just warming up, yeah.
So he was warming up, getting up to his 405, but just, not even in one of his heavy exertion reps. His back blew out on him.
He said he crawled to the training room on his hands and knees. He was in such pain. And we remember J.J. Watt missed 2016, missed all but the first three games of 2016 with a back issue. He won Defensive Player of the Year in 2015 with a litany of injuries. And I remember revealed in the offseason on our show on the Triple Threat that he had a back issue during that year.
Yeah.
So J.J. tells this story on the McAfee show about his disc blowing out in the weight room early in the season, and McAfee said, when was it that you got your epidural?
When was this? What time of year?
This was it was like week 4 or 5.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
275 takes him out. Mentally, you feel so weak because it was 275.
Did you squat anymore that year? Yeah. No, I changed obviously everything, but
thank goodness.
It's one of those things where you look back on it like it later, like you know how like let me be candid here. You look back on it and you're like, man, I probably should have like asked a few more questions. I probably should have like done a little more research, but you know how it is, man. When you're in it, and A, you're getting paid a lot of money. B, you got all these fans. C, you got your teammates. You're in the middle of the season. You're like, I don't care, man. Get me to Sunday. I don't care. Just get me back on that practice field. Get me out on the field. Even just telling that story, it does sound pretty dumb.
Outrageous, yeah. 405 every Monday.
Worked out, though.
Day after game, I need to be going through a 405 on my back, on my spine. Okay. I need to do it.
So that had to be the 2015 season that
I would
happened.
Guess, had yeah. Had to be, right? Yeah, because he had considered having surgery after that season, didn't, and then
it blew out again
in 2016.
So keep this in mind with JJ. If that was the 2015 season, and I'm 99% sure it was, he went on to not only win Defensive Player of the Year that year, but did it with a club on his hand for part of the year. Remember that, Seth? Remember he had a club hand, he had a cast on his hand for the second half of the season. And that was also the season where all of his core basically ripped off of its pelvis once the postseason rolled around in that game against Kansas City. So he was his core was on a string as well during that. Like, so everything from pretty much like his sternum down to his the upper part of his thighs, front and back, was a mess that year.
Right, yeah. Anything that has your spine tends to connect to a lot of other parts.
Correct.
Of the body.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are aware of this. You know, maybe they didn't take biology 101 the way I did in college. But your spine tends to be one of the more important parts of your body.
It's amazing, man. That's incredible.
Yeah, I think that no, but so I'm listening to that and I was impressed, but also thinking, all right, a 290-pound defensive end faces a lot more down-by-down exertion and strain than a quarterback. Yeah. And that Matt Stafford, now, you know, with the twisting and torquing and whatnot for a quarterback, obviously, that's a lot of stress and strain as well. But it's a reminder that, man, I think there's a really good chance that Matt Stafford's back bothers him at some point this year. But until it does, he might be the best version of whatever 37-year-old Matt Stafford can be. I'm not going into this game expecting his back to be an issue for him.
Yep.
And I think you go into this game fully expecting that Matt Stafford might be a little bit rusty because he didn't get a lot of reps in the preseason. But this is a guy that's played through a boatload of injuries before. As Cecil Shorts pointed out yesterday on our podcast, he just by virtue of him playing in Detroit all those years, like he had to, like that's all you need to know about his toughness. You know, he's worked through some things on some bad football teams. So I think there's a chance the Texans could make him feel really uncomfortable and the back could be an issue. But until it happens, I'm not going to act like it's definitely going to happen.
Yeah. Listening to JJ talk, I don't know anything about epidurals other than they're designed to, I guess, reduce the pain when you've got a back issue like that.
It can reduce the inflammation.
Yeah.
So whatever swelling is keeping the disc out of place, everything can kind of settle back in.
Okay. So that's a good education right there on that.
Yeah, because the pain with disc stuff or anything, like the pain is one thing, but it's the fact that once you pinch a nerve or something, you just can't. It doesn't matter what your pain tolerance is. You just can't move properly.
Yeah.
So you got to try to get everything settled back into place.
I until now, I knew virtually nothing about epidurals. When I heard J.J. Watt say that yesterday, that he took one and he got through the rest of the season, I'm like, Matthew Stafford's going to be fine. He's going to be fine.
No, J.J. wasn't 37 years old at that time.
That's true. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And he had already gotten himself into playing shape and speed and everything that year. So it was a matter of just trying to sustain that. Whereas for week one, there's a whole lot of things about this game where it's, okay, it's week one.
Mm-hmm.
Who has the advantages? Who has the disadvantages? The Rams have gotten off to slow starts in the last three seasons. A lot of people in LA wonder if it's because Sean McVay plays his starters so little that maybe they're just rusty at the beginning of the year. this is an extreme version of that for Matt Stafford. And he, you know, hasn't had a whole lot of time working with Devontae Adams. So I think they're not going to be the best version of the Rams offense in week one. The advantage the Texans might have is that because you're installing a new offense, yeah, they know Nick Caley and all of that. But as a player, man, it's hard. Week one, it sucks when you're trying to prepare for an offense and you don't really have any film of the guys you're going to play against in the system that they're running. So the Rams defensive players have very little film of the Texans starters running this offense. The coaches might have some good feel for what Caley might do or how they're going to operate, but the players themselves and getting those mental reps, they just can't. They when you're watching film, you're not getting those same mental reps. So I think the Texans are a disadvantage because they have a rookie play caller, but they do at least have a little bit of an element of surprise.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit in the next segment. Nick Caserio was on with us yesterday, and he talked about the Rams' defensive line. This game is going to be won in the trenches, one side or the other. Nick Caserio talked about that with us yesterday. So we'll hear from the Texans GM coming up next.